Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective.
Hello, Keegan.
Hello. How are you?
That was so solemn. I thought you were like making a pause to say my name too. You were like, hello. Okay.
It's not that dramatic. I'm just very tired.
Yeah.
I'm just very tired. And, you know, I think I said just last week or 2 weeks ago that I thrive when I'm busy, which is true. But every now and again, what happens when you take on a lot of projects is that you will find weeks in your life where it's a lot.
And where like it stacks
you
up.
Just get kind of like overwhelmed because everything does get stacked up. You'll have weeks that are great and you're busy to an amount that feels acceptable. But then weeks where it's just like, this is overwhelmingly busy. And yeah. I'm having one of those this week and it's okay.
I was going to say, because you're going to have like a weekend away.
Yes.
It's going to be nice. You'll be able to kind of relax.
Yes. My birthday is coming up.
Sure is.
It's tomorrow when the listeners are hearing about
this. I was going to say, it's not tomorrow, Keegan. Don't trick me like that. Jeez.
It is on the 20th. So I will be up in the mountains. I will be kicking it in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in front of a fire. That's so my good. Plan to decompress.
Perfect. I'm going to be real jealous. I was in front of a fire last weekend as well at my friend Lorenzo's house, and it was really nice. My things still smell like a bonfire, and I'm not mad at it.
It's the best. Honestly, like, there is nothing like getting out into nature. Like, I'm so grateful that we, you know, Anthony's boss had this place that we could go. Because this last year was so difficult, and there is something so revitalizing about like being around some tall trees, you know?
There really is. Yeah. I've been having to do those drives on the weekend, but I am just like yearning to be around some big trees and a lake and some serenity. And
really, you know? any kind of nature.
If wide you open have spaces, you know.
Access to, you know, a field or a beach or anything. Like, if you can just get out where the air feels clean and you don't see a building.
Right. Exactly.
That feels really good.
Exactly.
You know?
I know. I just keep saying I need some wide open spaces. I just need a big wide open space and then
good
I'll feel
Dixie
really good.
Good old Dixie Chick song. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Wide open spaces. Okay.
Yeah. For all of our Gen Z listeners, go Google it. They're not the Dixie Chicks anymore. They're the
Chicks. I was going to say they're the Chicks now. There's actually a really great documentary that they did called Shut Up and Sing. And so for any of our Gen Z listeners that don't know about the Chicks, go watch Shut Up and Sing. It's such a good documentary. Natalie, the main character, the lead singer. Lead singer, what is her name? Natalie Holloway. She said something about, you know, something negative about George Bush shortly after 9/11. And like,
she was getting out of the country too.
Yeah. In like a European concert. And they caught wind of it.
Uh-huh. It's important for people to remember that. Like, go watch the documentary and remember that every time somebody on the right says that people on the left are for cancel culture and how crazy cancel culture is.
Oh, my gosh.
I remember that happening.
She was getting horrible death threats. And that's when they wrote the song I'm Not Ready to Make Nice, where in the song they sang, you know, Shut Up and Sing or My Life Will Be Over in the song. Oh, it's so good. I love the Chicks so much.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, they're lovely.
So good. So good.
Well, I imagine we really only have one real thing to discuss this week.
Yes.
I'm sure that everybody at this point is aware of the situation that happened earlier this week.
In Atlanta.
It's been on my list for a while, or our list for a while, to talk about, you know, Asian American violence and the model minority myth and how those things can sometimes like intersect with each other. We haven't gotten to it yet, but I do think that it's important that we make it a priority to discuss this moving forward, because I feel like because of this minority, this model minority myth that exists within like Asian American circles or within the American culture in general, people tend not to think about the fact that in this country, there has been a long history of anti-Asian rhetoric and violence that has existed basically since the beginning.
Right.
And so while, yes, it has absolutely ramped up, attacks against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders are at an all-time high right now. The NYPD has said that hate crimes against Asian Americans have jumped 1,900% in New York City in the last year. Many of these attacks have been against elderly people. And according to the New York Times, there have been nearly 3,800 reports of hate incidents targeting Asian Americans nationwide since last March, which, as you will note, was the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic kind of hitting the United States. And our president at the time basically pointing the finger back at China, essentially. And that is when we... I mention all of that to say that none of this exists in a bubble. None of it exists in a vacuum. You're going to get comedians. You're going to get your family members. You're going to get people saying that, like, making jokes about the China virus or the Kung flu. I hate even saying it.
Yeah.
That those things are just jokes and everybody's being really sensitive and everybody knows it's a joke. But there, it's no coincidence that these things, there's a direct correlation between these things. And it's why language is so important. So I just wanted to preface before we get to talking about the events that happened on Tuesday.
Definitely.
With that, you know.
Yeah. I'm going to talk a little bit later after we've talked about the incident, a meeting that happened in California, just to kind of give an example of what you were just talking about, you know, different rhetoric and stuff that is being used, particularly by the right, and how Democrats are attempting to plead with them to stop and all of that kind of stuff. But let's get into what happened on Tuesday. A man went on a shooting rampage at three separate spas in the Atlanta area, killing eight people. And at the time that I wrote these notes earlier today, so I believe it would still be the same, there have only been four victims that have been identified from one of the salons as Delania Yuan, Paul, and I'm very sorry, by the way, if I mispronounce these names, Paul Andre Michaels, Jojia Tan, who was 49, and Daoyu Feng, who was 44. And there was one man at the salon that survived by the name of Elsius Hernandez Ortiz. And like I said, the rest of the Atlanta victims had not yet been identified at the time that I was taking these notes. The suspect, who I will not name throughout this, was age 21. And this is a big point that I wanted to talk to you about today. He says that his motive for these killings was his sexual addiction. And he carried out these shootings at massage parlors to stop his temptation and, according to a later, you know, statement that he gave, others' temptations and addictions as well. So that is his, that is what this person is claiming his motive
right.
for was.
Okay, so just to break it down a little bit, he went to one massage parlor, and that was Young's Massage Parlor in Acworth, which is about 30 miles outside of Atlanta. And then he drove to another location, 30 miles into Atlanta, where he went to the Gold Spa. And while they were there, investigating what they thought at the time was a robbery, and did find the bodies of
several
of the victims there.
Yeah.
They heard shots fired across the street at another spa, aromatherapy spa. And they went over there. They managed to apprehend this man while he was driving towards Florida.
Yeah, he said he wanted to arrive at a business that was connected to the porn industry. And it was actually his parents that alerted the police in suspicion of their son, along with a couple other roommates that he had had in like a rehabilitation center where he was allegedly being treated for a sex addiction. So his parents were the ones that called the police. They said that they had a tracking device in his phone. Apparently, the parents had also kicked him out the night before because of said sex addiction. All of this is alleged stuff, whatever. It's to me, it sounds like such a bullshit explanation, but something he's just grasping onto very, very tightly.
Well, here's the thing. It might be true. That might be his motivation. I'm not saying that it's not his motivation, but the issue becomes... It's still racially motivated.
I was going to say it's fetishization. People,
right. The subject of your obsession that you are blaming instead of taking responsibility for your own addiction and your own issues.
Uh-huh.
You are blaming these women and their very specific type of woman.
Exactly.
For your addiction. And they're calling this this new, what they're calling a quote unquote new phenomenon, but you know, it's not.
Right.
But they have now coined the term male supremacy terrorism. And people are talking about this, first of all, as though it's not a hate crime, as though targeting women for their gender isn't
and
a hate
also
crime.
For their race.
But that's exactly right. Or their profession. All of these things exist at an intersection with each other.
Exactly.
And so to say that, like, it's not racially motivated because it had to do with
a sex addiction. Yeah.
Doesn't make sense because there are women all over. Why are these the women that you feel like you need to target? And what is the bigger conversation around, like, Asian sexualization and fetishization that we have in this country, that we have always had, this hypersexualization. I've seen it firsthand with
too many
guys
times.
That I've known. It was a very kind of like open talking point for people who were in like quote unquote nerd culture, right? There was this
I feel like it was kind of a popular thing to be like a movie trope and to be talked about.
Absolutely.
In like the early aughts, from the early mid 2000s, like that was a very popular archetype.
Yes.
Was like the sexy Asian, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it Gross. Has been in Hollywood since like the beginning. I covered Anna Mae Wong, which same sort of situation. It was either you're always going to be like a temptress, or it was very difficult to find those like leading lady roles. And the media has absolutely perpetuated that stereotype.
Yeah. And I mean, another thing that was kind of brought up, especially in right wing circles in the last few weeks, is talking about Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss used a lot of really bad anti-Asian rhetoric in his books. There's a lot of really racist cartoons and depictions in his books. And it, that kind of stuff matters. Like, kids see that and they think it's normal, and they think that joking about it is normal, which then normalizes the violence. It's all tied together.
It's exactly. I was having this conversation with Anthony this morning, actually, because, you know, in the morning, I usually, like, I get up, I work out, and then I'll sit on the couch before work, and he'll go outside and have his coffee outside. And I went outside and I sat with him because, you know, he's half Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, hey, you know, like, how are you doing? Just to check in on him.
Yeah.
Just like, how are you doing with the attacks that happened this week? How are you feeling? How are you processing it? And we had a really good conversation about that because, I mean, both of us have kind of similar situations in that we're both half of a minority. He is half Filipino and grew up in a very white space and experienced racism that maybe you don't always even think about as racism because it's always framed as a joke, which is something that, like, I've experienced a lot. And we had that exact same conversation. I brought up Dr. Seuss. I brought up that exact same example where I was like, this is the reason why normalizing in a group of kids, right? When you have maybe one Asian kid in your class and you read that book that is derogatory or makes some kind of joke about a specific race or nationality, it first of all is going to single that kid out. And it's going to tell all of the other kids in the class, well, this was acceptable language by a beloved author.
Yes.
And it was read aloud to all of us in class. So it must be fine for me to also use that language when speaking to my classmate or whoever else. And it's why we really, really have to stop thinking that representation of minorities in media doesn't matter and that language doesn't matter, because it has a direct impact.
Yeah.
I mean, and just the way that this has been handled and covered, even Joe Biden has been super hesitant to call this what it is. Like, the media in general has had a really, like, they don't seem to be able to know what to do.
Yeah, there was actually a really great tweet that I had posted to our Instagram story, but I want to read it on here so everybody can see it. It was a tweet from Min81 that says, he didn't have a, quote, sexual addiction. He had racist sexual fantasies about dominating Asian women. In other words, he had fantasies of white supremacy enacted on them. Name it. And I just think that's so important. It's naming what it is. And I feel like even naming it, what did you say it was? Male terrorism or something like that?
Right. Male supremacy terrorism.
Male supremacy terrorism. I feel like that still isn't even what it is. You know what I mean?
Well,
I feel like you're tiptoeing
both
around.
I think it's both things.
It's like white male supremacy terrorism, you know?
Right, right. But it's both of those things, right? Because if he's saying that this wasn't maybe in his head he's like not equating
that it's
racial, right? Like, if he's saying I targeted these women because they're the subject of my fantasy or whatever, that is, we've seen it when we talked about incels, you know, like, that is male supremacy terrorism, right? It is also white supremacy terrorism. Like, both of those things, you know, it's, you feel like you can do whatever you want. And this is why, you know, when women of color say that they are at a higher risk, this is why, because they weren't just targeted because they were women. They were targeted because they were Asian women.
Yes.
Their risk became higher because they exist at multiple intersections, you know, and that's, I don't know.
I mean, the really harmful stereotypes surrounding Asian massage parlors, you know what I mean? Like, I've been to a few of them and I have never experienced anything shady or off color. I feel like there's just also this really negative stereotype of people that work in those types of salons are a certain type of way and a certain type of person, when that also raises the threat of, you know, sexual violence, just, I'm sure, in their everyday lives at their job, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what, though? Even if they are sex workers, like,
yeah, they still don't deserve to be treated badly.
They don't deserve to be treated badly, and if anything, they need more protection, because now they exist at a third intersection.
Yes, exactly.
People, who people for some reason
target,
deem to be less human and less worthy of protection and empathy.
Definitely,
like, it's, this whole thing has just made me so sad, and you know. Having been in the pandemic, we've had to deal with a lot of stuff.
Right? I know.
Like, we've had to deal with a lot of stuff, but something we've dealt with less over the past year, we've dealt with less mass shootings and less spree shootings, just because there's less gatherings, there's less people out.
Yeah.
And it's just a sad reminder that as things begin to open, this is part of it.
Yeah.
This is part of what we're going to start seeing now. Ugh. Again. Again.
Yeah. On Thursday in California, there was a House Judiciary Subcommittee where they heard from lawmakers, experts, and advocates about the rise of violence against Asian Americans since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, where they touched on a lot of the points that you were mentioning in the beginning of the episode. Representative Judy Chu said that discrimination grew worse when former President Trump began regularly referring to the COVID-19 virus as the China virus or the Wuhan flu. She says what started off as, quote, dirty looks and verbal assaults has escalated to attacks and violence against Asian Americans. And unfortunately, Republican committee members wanted to focus the meeting on other things. They didn't want to focus on what the big thing that happened this week. They wanted to talk about higher education admission practices and argued that the spike in Asian American violence has to do with a surge of crimes in the cities this past year, which really worked the Democratic representatives on the panel up, and they began to plead with their Republican colleagues. Representative Ted Lieu from Torrance said, "You can say racist, stupid stuff if you want, but I'm asking you, please stop using racist terms like Kung Flu, Wuhan virus, or other ethnic identifiers. I am not a virus. And when you say things like that, it hurts the Asian American community," which I think is just such such a true, clear-cut way of just saying, please, like, this affects me as your fellow colleague. Can you please refrain from that language? Thanks. And there was this one Republican representative named Chip Roy, who's just a real piece of work. He referenced the history of lynchings in Texas, claiming that it was evidence that the state, quote, takes justice very seriously.
What? What does that even mean?
The way that I read it and the way that it was responded to in this hearing, from what I understand, was that people who are seen as criminals, even if they're not, will get their day in court. I don't understand. You know what I mean? I don't understand
why you would even open your mouth to say something like that, especially given the fact that most of lynchings, most of what we deem in this country to be lynchings, it's not as if they've never happened to a white person, because they have.
Right.
But historically in this country, we associate lynchings with minorities broadly and African Americans specifically.
Right.
So to bring that up in a conversation about racism is so fucking tone deaf.
Yes. And it's what's interesting is that in comment to what he said, people on social media have pointed out that one of the nation's largest mass lynchings was the 1817 Chinese massacre in Los Angeles, which resulted in the deaths of up to 20 Chinese people at the hands of a mob. So I don't really know what his intentions were by referencing lynchings. What he was willing to gain out of that, or what side he was on, is very, very unclear.
It's unclear, yes.
But the mentioning of it at all is very distasteful, particularly with the history of violence like that in our country. It's just, I don't understand why he would bring it up in general. And there's a few other quotes that I got from him in that article, but it's not important enough for me to mention. He's just a real piece of work. This Chip Roy guy.
It's, I'm sorry. First of all, I know that my energy has been kind of aggro this episode, and that is in part because I'm tired, but it is also in part because I'm tired, yeah. of this happening, and I'm tired of people acting brand new every time this happens. I think that's the thing that is exhausting me the most, is that anytime something like this happens, people Yes, like they've never seen it before, and they will bend over backwards to try and find other excuses and other reasons. I mean, for God's sake, there was a deputy who gave a press conference who literally said that this kid, first of all, he's 21. 21, you guys.
Not
when
a kid.
I was 21, I was already living on my own hundreds of miles away from my parents. But okay.
Yeah, and he had just gotten kicked out of his parents' house the night before. So he's doing really well
rough
for himself.
Night. But like they said that this kid was fed up and that he had had a bad day and this is what he did. And
yeah, he was mad at his parents for kicking him out. So that's justifying murdering 8 people and injuring another. Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, he was at the end of his rope. Look, how many of us have been at the end of our rope?
I was about to say that. I'm like, I think I've been at the end of my rope at least once a day this past year.
Most of us throughout this last, everybody had a hard year. Most people throughout this last year have been barely hanging on, man. We're all hanging on by our fingernails. So for you to come out and say, for this sheriff deputy to come out and say this is
It's
wild
insulting.
To me. However, it becomes more clear when you realize that last year, at the beginning of the pandemic in April of 2020, he had purchased a shirt that said it looked like the Corona beer logo on a shirt that said COVID-19 imported from China. And posted this and said, love my shirt, get yours while they last. So you just know that this is where this person is operating from.
He's defending the person.
And it's built in, burnt in white supremacy. Call it what it fucking is.
Yeah.
Like, these people don't matter as much to you as this 21-year-old kid who was having a bad day. So what he did is justified.
It's now, so insulting. It's just so absolutely insulting to any friend or family member that was listening to that and hoping for maybe some sort of, like, closure, support, anything. And to get that be the response, I would be... that's when you'd have to worry about me killing somebody.
And they're like, well, he took responsibility. So
he didn't
I guess
take
it's
responsibility.
Okay.
All he did was admit that he did it. And that's the least that he can do at this point, honestly. It's the least mm-hmm. he can do is just say, yes, I did it. Plead guilty. Don't, you know what I mean? Whatever. Whatever is going to happen next. But, like, that is not something to commend a person on whatsoever right. by admitting that you did the one of the worst
the bare
things
minimum.
A human being
yeah.
can do.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So he was here, or he has been charged. So he has been charged with 8 counts of murder and 1 count of aggravated assault because there was one victim who survived
yeah.
the attacks. He has yet to be charged with a hate crime, but I wanted to cover this. He still could be.
Yes.
So
they're saying it's too early, right?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
As that's far what, as I'm seeing.
That's what I read earlier, and I was like,
Yeah, as far as I'm seeing, it's not even that it's too early. Okay, here it is.
Yes, I'm
so
sorry.
David,
tell me what's going on.
David Barkley, senior Southeast counsel for the Anti-Defamation League, said that Georgia's new hate crime law includes crimes related to biological sex and gender identity, as well as race, religion, and national origin. So if he targeted these women because of his alleged sex addiction, that's a hate crime because he targeted them based on their sex or
so
gender
either,
identity.
So either way, it's a hate crime from
right.
what I understand. So then why can't
exactly.
they just say it if literally either way, either excuse... Or truth,
yes.
or both.
Oh,
you know, that's what's confusing
in that
to
way.
Me.
Okay, yeah, I think you are actually right. Then I think maybe it is too soon because they are doing an investigation. So investigators will be looking at his past social media posts, as well as speaking with friends and family about his views towards women. I think they want to establish that he has a pattern
Definitely.
Of behavior, and
I mean,
all of this stuff is relevant.
I found it really interesting to read a bit about, like, the roommates that he had when he was staying in, like, halfway houses and rehabilitation centers, you know, talking about relapsing with them, talking about how, you know, I read that he was watching just hours and hours of porn at his parents' house, and that was one of the reasons that they mm-hmm. kicked him out. You know, so I feel like there is going to be plenty of, like, definitely some sort of, like, digital footprint that he left for
right. I mean,
some pretty damaging stuff, I'm sure.
I also want to say this because I have seen a lot of people on the left doing something that kind of rubs me the wrong way,
uh-huh.
and that is minimizing sexual addiction. Like, sex addiction is a real thing.
Oh,
okay?
Yes,
it's a real thing. It's damaging. It's a problem. It's not an excuse. Just like anything else,
exactly.
it's not an excuse. Because what we're seeing here is more, again, you know, talking about incel terrorism. So
poor
there was,
guy, he couldn't,
right.
you know. It is. Mm-hmm. He is very much in, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a part of that world at all. Online,
absolutely.
You know?
So Maria Bloom, who's an expert of terrorism and extremism at Georgia State University, she was talking about this attack in that it was similar to a lot of other attacks by incels. There were attacks last year in Toronto by a 17-year-old man. That feels like a million years ago. We talked about it on this podcast, but it feels like a million years
ago. It feels like at least two.
yeah. Who did a similar kind of thing, had a similar shooting spree. And
I always think of, I can never remember his name, which is fine, but the Santa Barbara shooters.
Oh, yes. Elliot. What's his stupid
Hunger
face?
Games son? I don't know. I just remember the chaos surrounding it and being. I remember being at Disneyland when it happened and like
mm-hmm.
being in a bathtub at Disneyland in my hotel room reading it and just being
and
like, what the fuck?
Reminder to listeners: if you want to hear more of our thoughts on that, or you know, understand what that is, we do have a whole episode on incels.
Yep,
so
where we do we
find
we
that.
Have an incels. Episode and we also but that was separate from the red pill episode, right? We did two separate
we have 3 episodes that would pertain to this. So we
toxic
have an incel
masculinity
4
is that the other
okay.
one?
We have 4 then because we have toxic masculinity, we have an episode on incels, we have an episode on red pilling, and we have an episode on, or maybe they're combined, we have an episode on YouTube extremism.
That's a separate one, you're right, that was a whole separate thing.
And they are all kind of
tied together in a way.
Tied together.
It would be interesting, actually, to like someday, like 50 years from now, when this is all over. Oh God, there'd be too many episodes. To like compile collections for to listen to like one specific like topic. Well, you know,
we did that for last
Black
year.
History
we did that
with month, with, right?
Well, we did it last summer, where we highlighted all of our episodes on Black history subjects, and we can do it and have been asked to do it actually for LGBTQ, and we can also do it for this as well, so that we can actually pull out and say, hey, if you're interested, listen to episode this and this and this.
Yes.
Because that way people don't have to dig. They can just go to the episode and find it.
I do appreciate when people ask us, though, if we've ever covered it or when they suggest it, because then it does help me to go back and Google it or go on our, you know, page and see, like, did we cover that? Or, like, what episode was that? And it always surprises me at what number episode things are.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's just funny.
But so she said, you know, basically that his motivations are not entirely clear necessarily, but targeting women because of a man's uncontrolled sexual impulses is classic misogyny. She said, quote, he had to shoot these women because, of course, he is not responsible for his own addiction. Mm-hmm. Basically saying that, like, these women are responsible for my attraction to them and their lack of response to me. You know, this is what's ruining my life.
Precisely.
I don't have to take responsibility.
And that is exactly that incel mentality that we've apparently discussed on four separate episodes.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely backwards and terrifying. And I think especially because, you know, the Sarah Everard story has been so big in the news discussing women's safety and violence against women. So I think it really is, and this is another story I feel like that's kind of adding to that same narrative of violence against women, but adding another step to it, you know?
Adding another component. I mean, this was, it was bound to happen at some point. People have been saying, I mean, just last weekend, I couldn't go, but Black Lives Matter Los Angeles had posted last weekend downtown, there was a rally, there was a protest for Asian lives, like essentially just saying like, hey, we need to come out and support. There's rising violence against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders right now. So the writing has been on the wall for a very long time. It was only a matter of time with nobody doing anything, nobody talking about it, nobody like really putting the spotlight on it. Like, it was only a matter of time before something like this happened. And because of the levels of violence that women face, period, it's not surprising that those two things would come to a head at the same time.
Exactly. Like,
So I kind of wanted to close the episode out by talking about how you can support Asian American communities right now. First of all, if you see a hate crime taking place, you can report it. Advocates and academics need data to effectively lobby for Asian communities. So you can visit at StopAAPIHate on Instagram or go to StopAAPIHate.org to report hate crimes in English as well as Asian languages on a national level. There are also local, city, and statewide reporting hotlines as well. In Los Angeles, you can dial 211 to receive immediate assistance, and that assistance is not associated with law enforcement, which is
amazing.
Good. You can also donate to Stop Asian Hate at GoFundMe.com/AAPI and or Asian Americans Advancing Justice Atlanta. They work to defend, protect, and advance the rights of Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, and other immigrants at all levels of government, as well as providing legal resources, and that is at advancingjustice-atlanta.org/donate. I will put these in the show notes as well. And I know that racism can take its toll on your mental health. Having to experience this violence and this trauma, having to be re-traumatized constantly by seeing people who look like you or your family members or even your friends constantly is exhausting. So if you are struggling, you can contact the Asian Mental Health Collective at asianmhc.org.
Thank you.
That's my spiel.
Yeah, no, thank you for giving all of those resources. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Okay. Well, if there are any news stories that you would like for us to cover in the future, go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. Or you can direct message us at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go to the group page and chat with the other listeners, and then go over to the business page and leave us a review. And if you haven't done so already, go ahead to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review there. That is what helps us get seen, and we really, really appreciate it.
Yes.
All right. That's all we have for you today. With all of that being said, we encourage you to rage on.
Bye. Bye-bye.